Good evening. Tonight is July 17th, 2017. Beautiful summer night tonight, middle of summer. We're here at the Rosenkreutz Institute for our sixth lecture in our series on enlightenment and illumination. We feel it's important to establish for us both the historical aspects of enlightenment, what that really means, the historical aspect of it, the spiritual historical as well, and then the natural form. So tonight I want to use this as a background for us to discover something really important for our present karma of our school today. And today we live in what could be considered the industrial age, and this is really to throw mankind into the aspect of his work, industry, but what kind of industry really is mankind involved in? And that is to give himself the opportunity to work in such a way that he carves out for himself a lifestyle, especially for our families and our health and well-being. Now, that is the ideal, isn't it? So we have really to work on that ideal. The best way to work on that ideal is to actually study spirituality at the same time. Now, anyone that denies that and thinks that they're just going to have that materialistic form, well, of course, they can proceed and do this and persist and do this. But what happens is that the spiritual, which really takes hold of them or can take hold of them, is of a nature that doesn't really do much. It's not an active spirit. So the point is to really understand what the spirit is and then to be able to apply it when it's necessary or needed. And we can think to ourselves that materialism is a spirit that is applied, and it is applied in such a way that people are quite satisfied to have that materialistic form. But people are also discovering that it is nearly impossible, in one sense, to really persist with that, for the simple reason that that which we really love in the world, those things which we love in the world, are of a temporal nature. Now, we can say, well, gee, the things like my car and all my hobbies and things like that, well, they're going to stay around because the machines are better and better and better. Well, that's fine. We understand that. But when we think of the spirit within us, and we can see here that that's where the modern illness really lie. The modern illness lie within us, deep down inside, that says, where is our true love nature? This love of the earth with all the power and strength that we can put into our earthly life really sets us up so that we can't take much out of this earth. And also to think to ourselves here, what is it that brings it about that we are so afraid of the spirit? And really it is that it is the spirit, not really within ourselves, that we're afraid of. It's what we might discover. And that discovery is what is about ourselves. Not within ourselves, but what is it that we're about? We don't want to discover that we're doing things that we shouldn't do, for instance, or we don't want to be told that the things that we're doing are wrong or we shouldn't proceed like that. So that when we consider what it is that has prevented mankind from penetrating into the realms of nature to find the spirit there, it is here that we discover one of the great truths of the ancient world, at the dawn of this world, that our philosophers spoke about, and that set it in motion, that men today are, in a sense, part of the domino effects of what occurred. So we have to go back to the beginning of this age where the alchemists and the Rosicrucians were calling for change in the world. Those are the impulses upon which we have this modern civilization. But the spirit of it, instead of the continuation of the philosophies of alchemy, we have chemistry. And instead of that, which is Rosicrucianism or Rosicrucian Christianity, we have something like the New Age forms of things, or we have the new forms of spirituality, which really don't consider what the Rosicrucian has. We don't consider what it is that is really at the kernel of the Rosicrucian stream, which brought it about, this change. And the reason why we bring up the Rosicrucian is because that takes an initiate to understand and comprehend the pathway. It takes an initiate to penetrate into the worlds of nature. It takes an initiate to go there ahead of time. So the provision by the spiritual worlds or by nature is to bring it about that there is a human being that can take upon himself the impulse to penetrate ahead of mankind into this realm and discover the things of the spirit and nature. This is the peculiarity of the whole experience for the last 500 years. And that is that people would certainly follow, or could have followed, any number of different philosophers in all the different ages in the past. But these philosophers, all the way up until the end of the 20th century, all these philosophers led to a certain barrier. So that's what we want to say to you tonight, is that men really would penetrate into the spirit if many or any of those human beings that had come in our past had actually succeeded in breaking through into a spirit in nature, or even to explain what the soul is in a consistent way. What we've explained to you about the soul is much more consistent than any before. We can assert it here in that way. Of course, many people might disagree, but we're going to assert the definition and see how you like it. See if it fits for you. The soul is the medium or the space in which we form our changes in. So the human being is constantly in this aspect of change within the soul. The soul is a place where the spirituality meets the world, and the world spirit or the nature spirit flows in there. The spirit, the elements, the light, warmth, life forces, the chemical forces, the things from nutrition. And here we also have the life forms of our biology. So how many of you feel that things like sexuality are very essential for your life? And if you admit it and you get down to it, you can see this is part of your life. It's something you feel, you question it. When you feel the passions come into you, you have to admit this is not just something of a moral nature. It is something also that many could consider to be an impulse of life. It is that which connects us to the earth in a way. And this is the vitality, the form of vitality which separates passion in our being from the growing form of our strength, our courage. And when we delve into the psychological aspects of this, it's very difficult to navigate through that. But we can tell you that this is where the spirit is most important to study. It is here that the form of consciousness can extend into the powers of nature. And why? Because this is more or less the hidden realm of the human soul. The impulses, the passions really hide what it is that is the life form of our sexuality. So I want you to see that to go into the spirit of nature is actually to also penetrate into the human sexuality. And that means that you're going to either increase in power, you're going to increase in vitality, you're going to increase in bodily strength. Your body is going to feel much more of a participant in the forces of nature. Now, I want you to think of it here when you look at a creature. For instance, you think a creature like, for instance, a dog. You think that a dog has a problem with his sexuality. Well, Perhaps. But look at the strength in the dog. Look at how he holds his muscles. Look at how proud he holds his head when he goes through the world. And this is there because he can feel the vital energy of that sexuality. Now, it's very clear how that dog relates to the sexual, and it's not really something that human beings should take upon themselves. It is of that nature, of that form, that we just want to look at. We want to look at that vital form that flows into the muscles there. This is important for us. This is probably more for the males to contemplate. Now, when we think of the feminine aspects of things, we're going to look definitely at the cats. How do the cats move? If girls, females, want to learn about their sexuality and the problems of it, they can look to the realm of the cats. Just like with the boys, when they see what it is that they really don't want to be found doing as a human being, they want to do something more and better. So when you look at these creatures, you can learn something. If you're not peevish about this, I'm sure that in our modern age, many people can handle this kind of understanding. This is where we become enlightened about our own nature. This is not illumination, my friends. Illumination we talked about in our previous five lectures. But you can see that when you understand what enlightenment is, it really is something not just about living on top of the world in a kind of a rationalism that says, here I have discovered that I'm a thinking being and all that. No, it is also to manage your body, to manage it. Now, if the boys manage it with that strength, but that elegance, look at how the dog moves his legs. Look at how these creatures, the horses, there's another one like the dogs, the horses, and then the other creatures like that, zebras and so on and so forth, these creatures from Africa, and they are elegant. They are powerful, and they are very proud of that physical nature. And they're also very sexually adept. They're not as what a male would be in a human form that has no power to prevent himself from his passions. The animals are ruled in a certain way by a nature spirit. So we have to consider that this nature spirit has a power over them that gives them a certain advantage. That spirit has to be awakened in a human being, and that means he has to study what it is that's in the spirit of nature that can speak to him out of the spirit. Now, this sounds like we're just going to, for instance, go in a fantastic way into the spirit of nature and believe in all kinds of fantastic fantasies that we are speaking to the spirit. Well, no, that's not actually what we are aiming at. What we're aiming at is to discover the impulse and then the speaking form, the wisdom. Something says to you, look at this. And then it says, here, look at what you can do and look what it can do for you. This is what we want to point out. We want to point out that this is a very practical thing, my friends. This is something that you might call common sense, too, because the spirit of common sense is a speaking wisdom. If men can hear or could hear the common sense of nature or the common sense speaking out of nature, they would learn a lot about nature. Now, this is the male form. Now, when we go to the female, which is significantly different than the male form, in the form of enlightenment, now females can also have a similar form of enlightenment, then when they contemplate the female or the feminine or the feline creatures of the world, especially the feline creatures, the cats and the lion, or the lionesses and all these creatures, they can hear and feel that wisdom in quite a powerful way, my friends, especially for the girls that are sensitive. And if they can speak to these creatures in a certain way, now, the boys, they have a relationship more with these other forms, these other canine creatures and the horses. Now, of course, women do speak in a certain way with the horses, but this also is not the same as the feline creatures. There's something to learn from these cats and tigers of the world. And this is what we want to point our consciousness towards. And there comes a wisdom to us. When you feel this resistance inside of you, do you see? It says like this. Do you see? This is what you don't want to be like. You see how the cat rolls on the ground and stretches her paws in a certain way. Now, sometimes that looks to be very, very nice and elegant. But other times, the males and the females both display certain characteristics for females, human females, to perceive and learn about. But when there is an agony about it, the human female says, there, that's what I want to learn. That's what I want to get beyond. The reason why we learn like this is so that we can get an elegance to our character, to spread and emanate this characteristic within our atmosphere, to emanate this is the whole idea of illuminating the soul. So the enlightenment of ourselves, the enlightenment, this is an enlightenment of the 21st century, something that is founded really in the concepts of our school that I'm giving out to you. It's an enlightenment different than the Age of Reason gave to us. This is not just rational. This is the picturesque form of the human spirit. This is a spirit coming to you as an inspired content. But you have to look at nature. This is really like going to a library and speaking in such a way that your eyes are telling the spirits of nature, here, speak when I look at this. Speak when I see this. Speak when I see that. Now, for the females, I'm going to point out this too. It is in your inner life. It's in that inner life and how it connects to the outward life that's important for you. So you are seeing inside yourself more. If human female is to feel how her emanation feels out into the world, how it separates itself off, how she understands how she closes herself and darkens. So this is going to give you an idea of that particular side of nature, how you de-enlighten yourself. And this is an elegance, how you darken yourself and how you, in this darkening form of yourself, how you can do it in an elegant way. So I want you to really underline that, how you can make yourself hidden and yet visible in your own form of secrecy. Now, this is what a cat does, doesn't she? You can marvel at how a cat can hide itself, sitting, laying, sleeping on a fence, for instance. Suddenly you just see an ear wobble or something because a fly touched it and the ear twitches. And then you see, oh, that's a cat on the fence. It's not just a piece of wood. Cats are very, very, very interesting in how they blend. They sit so still and they blend right into nature. And so this can be an inspiration for the female. It settles down the inner agitation within a female body. One of the most important things to do is to settle that body down for the girls. For the females and the women of the world, it is really to settle down that nature. And when that nature is settled down and the worlds of that inner nature is settled down, there are marvelous things that can come out of that nature, beautiful things. And one of the things that our females of the world can notice is that if the female cat is whining and whining and whining and whining, the world wants to actually say, okay, kitty, come on, quiet. And you want to shoo them out of the backyard. You want to shoo them away. And this is exactly what you want to understand. You want to compare that to really what you think you need and then think of what you really want to give to the cat. You want to give them a good broom, a bristle broom, and shoo them away. So if you're wondering, ladies, why people want to shoo you away in your whining stages, well, then you just have to look inside yourself and see if any of you can actually go out and speak to a cat and she actually listens in a certain way. Well, that can give you some insights there. Sometimes it is that the cat answers back and it actually makes sense. And so you can often speak to those creatures. The females can speak to those creatures back and forth, and those creatures are in a very understanding way. This can lead also human beings in deeper and deeper into conversation with nature, because nature is all integrated. The birds and the cats, the mice and the cats, all these creatures are part of that integrated soul of nature. Now, when we come to the male soul, his soul is really of a cosmic nature. He loves the terrestrial world, loves to be in nature. And when a male is bewildered inside of himself, it's because of isolation, being cooped up, being inside of rooms and things like that. He needs the fresh air. He needs the fields. He needs to understand or feel. He needs to understand himself out of the forms and forces of nature. He needs to connect to stars and moon and sun. And he likes to be invigorated by the realms of nature. And so this is a form of enlightening his soul. See? So the female is enlightening herself inside. She says, gee, I want to know about myself. But in knowing herself, she takes the knowledge of herself and goes out into the world with it, and then discovers, here are the elegant forms of other creatures, and likes to contemplate those things or to speak to those creatures. Here you should be like this. Here you should be like that. So there comes this emanating form of the female. With the male, he is taking into himself the forces of nature. He doesn't mind to do that. He wants to activate himself from the light, from the beautiful stars, from the beautiful moonlight. He likes to immerse himself in the darkness or the dirt, get his hands in those substances, and also the smells of them, those things he falls in love with. He doesn't mind tasting the cow's manure, in one sense, if he's a farmer. He's going to do this. This is going to be what he wants. He wants to smell the things. He wants to put his nose right into these things. Of course, this is not the same for the females, of course. They're not of that nature that they can do these things. I have to point out to you that females are about 2,000 times more sensitive in the sense of smell, for instance. They're that many thousand times more sensitive in their sense of smell. So it is that to get close to the realm of nature, to really get close up with it, is really something that a male can do, because he's not as sensitive in that sense. But for the things far away, he becomes very, very excited. For the female, the far away is within her. If you have a female in your life and you're a male, you notice that her soul is just as deep or deeper than the cosmic worlds. He discovers all kinds of new things all the time in her. If only she just has the courage and the strength to start putting those things in motion. Just like the cosmos goes in motion, it's like a clock, so does the soul of a human female. She can turn on her little turnstool inside of herself and create the zodiac, the realm of the animals that twitch and turn and dance throughout the year or through the festivals. This is something to understand about this. This brings about our character enlightenment. Our enlightenment can extend into all kinds of characteristics of ourselves, into our soul life, into our descending cosmic forms, into the art, into the folklore. If we feel this, this is really the spirit of nature coming back into us and giving us power and energy for living. Now, my friends, I'm going to go back to that very, very beginning thing. This vitality, this sexual vitality is just one thing. It is not a passion. It is not a passion that's going to lead you into the worlds of nature in a dreamy, fantastic way, and or a fantasy, and in that way to give you an enchantment. Many people think that love is a form of enchantment, but actually love is just as much a form of joining with your vitality. And that means that you're not going to expend your forces in a way that drains those forces in an incorrect way. There is a power there that you must learn to preserve. The power has to be within you as a power, but it also has to be that you don't waste it. To waste your powers, to waste those forces, then means that you have to have a spirit in you that counters it and says, this is what you gain by stopping this form of your activity that is draining you, that is draining your emotions, your feelings. So this is going to be a hard work for many of us today. Now, as a comfort in the ancient ages, this really was the basis for the fear of the spirit. And at the beginning of this era, it was that mankind was afraid, deeply afraid of the spirit of nature, but he knew he had to penetrate it. Just consider to yourself how men were satisfied to study diagrams and make symbols and signs and sit at a desk and draw pictures and make manuscripts and really revel inside themselves in their own reveries over the beauty of thought, over the fact that mankind had just completed everything he needed to think. And he thought in such a way that, like a person who had set out in the morning to go around the lake and completed the whole journey, mankind had felt he walked all around the realm of logic. He felt he walked all around the realm of his consciousness. There could be nothing that could assail that consciousness. It was tough. It was strong. It was even considered to be very odd that a man could fall in morality because his thinking was so precise. The thinking was like a clock. It was a precision instrument. And men, if you could go back to the age of this kind of thinking and learning, and it wasn't too long ago, my friends, when the legacy of this was still present, men were completely solid. Their thinking was extremely solid. But here, my friends, I want you to understand this. If you can get this spirit in you, we're going to bring it up again in the subsequent lectures. But it was this spirit that caused all the nature spirits to rally against the souls of men. Because here it was kind of a demonic emanation into the realms of nature too. Because nature hadn't caught up with mankind. Nature was not as quick. Nature was not as powerful as men's thinking. And the reason is because the gods had actually influenced men's thinking, but hadn't done anything with the thinking processes of nature. Consider that. Everything that emanated from the creatures of nature and the human beings that were connected to those creatures, all those things were subject to enchantments. All the creatures are still involved in their enchanted form. And of course, they prance around men today. Men don't understand what emanates as a spirit out of a cat. Not yet. They don't understand what emanates from a dog. They think that they're so superior to the dog that they can say, well, you're a dog, you're an animal, and boy, you know, I'm much better. But they don't see how the dog is very gleeful, or the cat is very gleeful, at the failures of the human personality. It is there that you get the eyes, the same eyes that I was giving you to look at the creatures, are going to be the same eyes that are actually looking at you as well. You just never noticed it. But the creatures notice it. They use your substance. You do not actually notice it or pay attention enough to it. So human beings have been feeding into the realms of the animals. They've been feeding into the elemental worlds as well. They've been feeding the elemental worlds. Into those elemental worlds is flowing all of mankind's forces, his ruination forces, his catastrophic forces, the forces that cause suffering and pain inside of his own being, the run around passions of his consciousness, his laughing nature where he just laughs and makes fun of everything, that dribbles out of his being and becomes powers of the elements. My friends, it's a lot to understand, isn't it? But when you look at nature and you think to yourself, here is something that can actually change my being. Think about it. You can read lots of books and discover how to change yourself. But does it work? Doesn't work very well. Usually, when you read the books, you change for a little bit and then you're back to your old nature. But when it comes to this kind of contemplation of nature, you discover right away it affects you. It flows into you. It begins to alter your being. And the reason is that because it is the substance of change. It is soul substance. And this tastes good. It's not a substance that we can think to ourselves like this, that it's thought substance, that we can resist it and oppose it in a certain way. We can toy with it. We can play around with that in an intellectual way, as men do, in a conceptual way. But when it comes to the things of nature, when we create pictures of nature, and then we go on to contemplate the creatures, there we are actually tasting, in a certain sense, we are gathering up astrality from these creatures. And they are very effective in affecting us. If you eat honey, for instance, it's such a powerful thing to eat that it is going to affect your soul. You have to understand that when people search for the raw honeys, the ones that aren't cooked and are as pure as they can get, they're also buying something that is very, very dynamic and potent in the sense that it affects the human soul. It can bring it about a certain form of bliss inside the human soul, a certain form of warmth. Also, it has a healing power. It's a moisturizer as well. It has the power to resist infection, to give you the power to resist infections. And to heal wounds as well. People used to dab a little bit of honey on a cut or a bruise or even an insect bite. People add water to it and use it as a moisturizer for the skin. And it's a great moisturizer. You can see it in some of the best soaps for females then when they want to soften their skin to use honey soaps. Well, these are just some observations for you that bring it about that you become enlightened about these softer forms of nature and how they can pass into, they have an affinity for the human organization, the human body. When we say affinity, that means that there is something that penetrates and attaches to us. Now, what is it that it attaches to? It attaches to us, to our etheric nature, which is based on light. The life forces, as we discussed them, that's the nutrition. That is the nutrition that's not just the foods you're eating. Nutrition is also the warmth that you get, the salt that you taste, the sugars, the sweetness that you want in your soul. This nutrition also is part of that which is going to give you an idea of what streams into you out of nature. So to understand the etheric streamings of things, you're also going to need to understand what is astral streaming, astrally streaming. So the light contains astrality, my friends. Not all light is just light as if it comes from a light that's in a room, for instance, a bulb. That is not the same light that is coming from the eye of a creature. If you want to see the differences in the eyes of creatures, go to the zoo and then look into the eyes of a lion once and see if you can actually stare into that eye for even 2 or 3 seconds without feeling an immense power come at you from that creature. Well, there you're going to see or feel astrality. You're going to be able to experience it. And it can scare you. It can put you so high and fiery inside yourself that you jump, maybe. It is such that if that creature were to roar and you don't know, notice that the creature is there just a foot away from you in a cage or something like that. If you, for instance, come upon these creatures as I did once, going through a parking lot that had the cages of the creatures in it, suddenly coming upon a tiger in a cage that I didn't notice until I was only a foot away. And it was just the breath and click of the tongue and the mouth, and then I saw the eyes first. And it was such that I was staring into the most penetrating eyes I have ever seen. Eyes on fire, like the most incredible creature. And so it is, my friends, that we learn lots of things from this, don't we? And of course, as you listen to this, you can see for yourself that the enlightenment that we get from penetrating into nature is also something that depends upon our strength. We can add the strength later. We can say, look, I was really scared in front of that cage of that tiger. And anybody can be at any age. It doesn't matter what age. It really depends on your experience. So when we go back to the age at the beginning of this era, we can see that mankind trembled when they thought of what it is that it's going to take to understand the continent of Africa and South America and North America and Asia and India. These places were not only foreign lands, but they had peoples that didn't think like the Europeans. It's very important for us to consider. Here is this height of thinking culture. And in fact, the cultures of Europe, the German cultures, all the way until the outbreak of World War I, it was here that Germany, for instance, didn't ever have any unemployment. Imagine that, a culture that subsisted and very well, too, on all their production and everything they did. It was the modern age that put them into debt and peril. It was the greed of their rulers, the idea that they were better than everyone and that they could teach everyone in the whole world how to do exactly how they do. Well, that was a great and noble thought, but it was catastrophic, my friends, as we all know. And what was it that they were really trying to do? They were really trying to hold men aloof. And we call that today a kind of a snootiness. A snootiness. The age of enlightenment had changed to the age of snooty human beings. You could really say that about our previous age, that it really was not an age of industrialization. It was an age of snooty people that got themselves in very big trouble because of it. But there is a justified reason for this, and that is basically that these men were afraid of the forces of nature. What represented itself in the realms of Russia, for instance, were men that lived more in the realms of nature and were Caucasian. But they were somewhat also Tartars. They were somewhat of the Tartar race. And so there was a lot of fear of these Eastern peoples, these Slavic peoples. So they were called slaves or Slavic peoples. They were the slaves of the Romans. These are the peoples from the Hungarian lineage, the Ungar regions of the Ungar tribes of China. That's who became later the Hungarians. Ungars. These are Mongolians. And there were white Mongolians that came to the west from the east. These are some of the secrets of time. But it is that at the beginning of this age, these peoples were much more conversant with the powers and forces of nature. And they lived in the powers and forces of nature, but not as men that dealt with that stream of consciousness, of light and illumination. No, that's not what they had. But they were very, very proficient at the form of vitality that we're talking about, that virility, that sexuality and the nutrition. So their foods and their powers to work as males and females in the world was really set out in a certain natural way, in a very powerful way at that, in a very healthy way too. So we have to point this out, that these human beings were able to influence the European culture in a certain sense, but then there was the super sophisticated and the thinkers, the cultural people who were very much of that thinking nature, the intellectual, the higher forms of society, which looked down upon the lower forms of society in some forms. But then there were the working peoples, the farmers, and all the estates that the Germans and the French had and the Italians. And these cultures, more or less, some less, of course, the Latin cultures was a little different, but more or less had a certain balance between the lower classes and the upper classes, especially the Germans. The Germans were very good at being very gracious to the people that worked for them. But however it is, the way the world history was, it went the way it didn't. We're not going to go into that today, but what we want to talk about is what is here as the possibilities for today. So we're just bringing this up to compare, and that is that when these intellectual forces confronted the fact or the factors of the coming age where men would penetrate into the realms of nature, would want to go to the tops of the mountains and dive to the bottoms of the seas and to conquer new continents and new lands. Here it was that men also felt that the soul had a huge gulf or abyss within it, a huge one, and something very marked, and that below in the threshold of the consciousness, there was that form which everybody knew today, everybody knew it today, there was that sexuality which was not actually understood. Either it was passionate or it was promiscuous, but it was certainly not in that form that we're talking about. It didn't have a style and a power yet. People were subject to it. They were enslaved by it, as today men are still of that particular nature. They haven't conquered this yet. They don't know exactly what to do with it. I want you to pay attention to this. This is really critical because this is a source of embarrassment. This is where the creeping in of the demonic has creeped in and took over everything in our world today. This is where the corruption is like a rust or a virus is infecting everybody. It is because this malady of the sexuality doesn't have the character form. It doesn't have the image out of nature for man. This is what a man of stature and power, of good stature looks like, of good posturing, of good strength, standing with his feet upon the world and looking really as a man with managing, able to manage himself, even with powerful passions within his breast, a powerful soul that loves within his heart, that emanates out and embraces sun and moon and stars, is not afraid of these things. Modern man is afraid of those. And why? Because here, the sexuality has not yet been understood in the sense that he needs the imprint out of nature. He needs to conquer that form that's coming to him out of nature, to carve it like he would a sculpture or a log, a piece of wood into a beautiful form. He must use his physical nature in such the same way. He must carve it into something that is worthy of his own architecture. So he must have the spirit in him to know what is his goal. And so lacking that, the spirits of nature have a field of play over the souls of men, mostly males, and also to bring it about that the females seduce these males, is because here that we get these very slobbery kinds of males that are too weak. They have to be stronger against these forces. Of course, there's a lot of males that wouldn't accept this because they think that the powers within them have to do with giving in to these things. They don't really know what power there is yet. Of course, there many men are very clear of that for their karma, but it is that here the character needs to be there. It needs to be there in the forms of art. It needs to be there in what we see as the examples and models of our civilization. Now, lacking these things, or because we lack these things, because it's not really displayed in our world, it shows us that through the arts, there is a message that needs to be understood. Maybe it's an embarrassing message. Maybe it's a message that can't be understood in our age. Maybe we have to wait 25 years and people will look back and say, see, look at those men of that age, and this is why they failed. Well, what is it that's about that? We probably can't complete this whole picture tonight, so we'll continue this in our subsequent lectures. But it is that there is a powerful, extremely powerful enchantment. That's the point, my friends. The spirit has a power of the male human soul, and the female wields this power against him. He feels that the more beautiful, the more enchanting, the more enchantable that he is, then he can call himself a romantic and a poet and so on and so forth. Well, this may be true, but it does lead to that which we know of as the sorry heart, the actual breaking down of that soul. And of course, that can lead to marriage, and people think this is just a normal thing. But really, what is here is, we want to make a comment on that now, and this is where our school and our teaching comes in, and in a brilliant way. It is here that another path needs to be understood and placed right there, right at that point. Yes, we can say to the poetry. Yes, we can say that the poet should be there, but the poet is not there. The actual form that's there is this love that is actually hiding or masking an aggressive form, a form that wants to conquer something for itself and conquer it so that it is in its own power of manipulation. Now, this is a terrible thing to feel and understand. So when we think to ourselves, how do I, as a male, how will I go into the world and not subjugate, not enslave? This is the question, isn't it? How do I clothe my life and my words so that I can have something of a peace, something of a beauty descend here? So these are the tasks of our age. These are the tasks that maybe we don't have an answer today, but just the fact that we contemplate them, just the fact that we take it into ourselves as a spirit, again, we will be approached by something out of the wisdom of nature herself. And that is, there we rise not from a, we rise up out of the contemplations of creatures and all the creatures, and there we begin to see what comes to us as the realm again of the living gods. Now, these are gods of today, and gods of the ancient world too that still persist. Now, they're not living gods now at this stage when they're from an ancient time. These are just the fading forces, or what St. Paul called the fading splendor of these things. We can feel how they want to fade, in a certain sense, fade into us and be part of our wills. And these gods can rest in a peaceful way that they have given to human beings something very, very, very important to those gods and very important to the human souls to receive it. And that is that it's the incentive to take that wisdom, like a modern Odysseus who sailed with a black ship to the realm of the dead in a dark, dark night on the sea. That is as scary as it gets, my friends. Without lights, on a sea, to the realm of the dead, with a ship all black. That is as scary as it gets in any case and for any reason. If you can feel that strength of character, those bold, bold men that were upon that ship, well, feel within yourself the strength that it has to be, the blood boiling so strong and so powerful to do that and to accomplish it. So it is that you too can feel strong inside of you against disease, against illness, against loss of vitality, and you can feel the power come back into you to lift you into your consciousness and say, here, stand up and walk. Stand up, pick up yourself. Pick yourself up from those things and use that consciousness to build yourself into a powerful being. That is the enlightenment of the modern age. So what didn't pass into our age as enlightenment, for the age of enlightenment was said to have passed away. I don't know why it passed away. You can come up with some reasons for yourself. For our age, we reestablish the enlightenment. And this is not just a rational enlightenment. This is the enlightenment of what is necessary or necessity to have a vitality, to restore the health of the life current within us, the vital life forces. When we say life forces, we're talking about those things that create. The ether body that is connected to the life force is your creative force. Life. To understand the life ether, that is to need and use enlightenment, to use illumination, to use reflection. Those are the other three ethers. And what comes out of the life ether is the spirit of yourself, your ego. Thank you tonight for listening to this sixth lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination.